You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of February 21st, 2018, and grab your palicos right meow. It's time to talk about Monster Hunter.
Oh my god, those meow puns never get old.
There's a lot of them too.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorous conversation about video games, and the hunt is on!
The hunt continues.
The hunt continues, that's true. It's been on for a while. That hunt is Monster Hunter World, which launched, was it this month? Must have been last month. End of last month.
It was end of January, because we played a little bit of it right at the end, and I've been poking at it since then.
We did talk a little bit about it when we did a What We've Been Playing podcast maybe 3 weeks ago or so. At this point, I've gotten pretty deep in. Scott, you've made your way. You foraged. You found herbs.
Yeah. I've probably gotten in a lot of people's way online.
Seeds. You found some seeds. That's true. We've started to use that term blueberry, which I think we are still bringing from Destiny, to talk about randos that you group up with.
Blueberry? What's the etymology of that?
The etymology is when someone's in your party that's not a friend, their name is blue. I honestly kind of forget where that term came from, but we've been using it, like the group of friends that I've been playing with for years now.
Monster Hunter is full of blueberries.
This is the soft and squishiest of the berries.
What can I craft with it?
That's, yeah, exactly right. So we're talking a little bit more about Monster Hunter World today. Why don't we start off? I'm curious to know, now that you've put in more time, what are the weapons you're using? Because this, to me, this is like, you know when you meet someone for the first time and you go like, oh, hi, I'm Scott. What do you do for a living? That's the basic question. Like, well, you know,
what's your main weapon, Monster Hunter?
Yeah, I'm a Gunlance user.
I was a Gunlance user. I started with the Gunlance.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know what a Gunlance is. I presume it's like a gun sword.
Yes. It is like the huge sword, except it moves a bit slower and it has some of the ending combos basically shoot bullets at the end.
Oh, at the end. Okay, so you have to complete your full combo in order to fire the bullet.
Basically, you can... the bullets act as like the end of a combo. Like, it's weird. It's kind of like figure skating or Olympic skiing where like
you topical.
Can end your... Yeah, instead of doing like, you know, instead of doing a 1080, you can stop and just do a 900 and like land it. So it's kind of like that where you just end the combo with a bullet.
I saw that Japanese figure skater land like a double axel and then fire a gun at the exact moment.
Little blade do you touched. Know, he's still spinning right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it stopped.
So you used to use the Gunlance.
I used to use the Gunlance.
What do you use now? And why did you change?
So the Gunlance was cool, but it moved a little slow for me. And okay. I mean, this is saying a lot, because a lot of these weapons move pretty slowly.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt like I was getting locked into combos and not able to... You cut them off as easily because you just start. And once you start, you are pot committed, man. Like, you just have to keep going with that combo.
There are very few animations that you can cancel.
Yeah. So I actually spent a good, I don't know, close to an hour testing every single weapon.
Every weapon, wow.
And I just went into the training grounds and started using every single one. Have you used the hunting horn, by the way?
I have.
Holy crap, that thing is amazing, but I don't know if I have the patience to really get good at it.
I really enjoy the hunting horn. I think I'm pretty good at it at this point, but yeah, that is a beastly weapon.
I also wasn't reading any guides, so I was just trying to figure out how it works.
And I mean,
that probably was a mistake.
Well, I mean, to be honest though, I think your method of experimenting with weapons is the best way, because honestly, you know, if you're new to Monster Hunter, you're going to be spending so much time using these weapons. Like, you know, every time you fight a monster, especially the harder ones, you know, you're looking at a 30 to 50, potentially a 50-minute encounter with a boss over multiple stages. Yep. And then you're going to be doing these monster fights again and again and again. you know, and you're going to be preparing for it. So once you're in there with the weapon of choice, like, you're going to have to invest time, and not just time hunting the monsters, but time practicing and getting better at that particular weapon. And you're going to be dumping in resources to improve the weapon or get new versions of that weapon. So diving in right off the bat and just seeing which one feels right is probably the best way to go about doing it.
So, I mean, I tried it all. I even tried the bow and arrow. And it's also fascinating. I'd be interested to hear what the game is like as a ranged, as a ranged weapon expert, because it just must be so different. The flow of combat must be so different.
I don't know, though, because I've seen people in my party with bow weapons, and then like the monsters will just turn on them and charge them, and then pretty quickly they're just rolling like everybody else is.
But do they then have to just get their distance and start firing away at again, or do they shoot super close range?
That's a good question. I don't know, because I'm usually too busy trying to climb onto like a tall branch and
jump on
rodeo.
It.
Yeah, rodeo a fucking huge dinosaur.
Oh yeah. So what I've stuck with is the charge blade.
The charge blade. Okay, how does the charge blade work? So, I've not used anything but the two weapons I've started with.
So the charge blade works a little bit like the gun lance, but it has two forms. So the first form is a sword and shield.
Which is not to be confused with the sword and shield.
No, yes.
It's own just, weapon.
Yeah, its own. Yeah, that's a different weapon. This one, the first form is a one-handed sword and a one-handed shield. And as you attack, you build up energy in the sword. And then... Yes.
Yep.
And then you have to discharge the energy to fill up files of basically explosive bullets.
Yeah.
And then you then transform the sword by jamming it into the shield and turning it into a huge axe.
Like a fucking trick weapon from Bloodborne.
Exactly. Yeah. As I was using it, I was like, man, I wonder why I like this thing so much. Oh, right. This is the fucking crazy whip thing from,
Yeah.
And so, yeah, once you build up your files, it's best to switch over to the huge two-handed axe mode. And then, similar to the gun lance, you just have these huge, like, long sweeping combos with the files discharging energy to end or to chain a combo, basically.
And so once you're done, I don't know, filing your taxes or whatever, you just go right back to sword and shield?
Not necessarily, because those huge two-handed weapons just do a lot of damage.
Yeah.
But if you're doing it right, you are on the fly switching in the same combo, ending your combo by switching it back into the sword, charging up again, switching back to the axe, discharging, and continuing that cycle.
So my understanding is actually the charge blade is one of the stronger weapons in the game and also one of the most complicated weapons you could have possibly chosen.
Well, that tracks with my understanding, because I was like, man, this game's fucking complicated. And like the files itself, like I think, I don't know if this is true or not, so don't make fun of me if I'm wrong, but I think
as you
charge up your sword, if you don't discharge the files, it actually hurts your sword. Like, you'll start to bounce your attacks off. Like, you'll be overcharged, basically.
Oh, really?
So, there's this constant... There's this constant balance of, am I charging up but not overheating the sword, basically.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I would not be the least bit surprised. It feels... I mean, there's certainly... And I think in all of the weapons and in some of the ways that I've seen people play, like the insect glaives, like there's all of these discrete steps that you're meant to follow to really maximize your damage. So I wouldn't be surprised if they sort of interrupted that, if you interrupt that flow, you're not executing right, it'll provide you feedback by giving you diminishing returns on the effectiveness of your ability. Out of curiosity, can you block? Like when you have the sealed shield out, can you like lift it up and stop an attack?
Yeah, so if on L2, you can just lift up and use the shield as a shield. And you also have to do that in order to... You have to pull your sword out and then block and press circle to discharge your energy into the files. So you're kind of... There's kind of an incentive to make sure that you're using the shield.
I cannot believe they use the word files. That is so unfun. Like, that is... How do we find like the worst name we could possibly give something that is like a badass weapon?
Yeah, it just makes filing. It's files like a scientific thing, like a beaker or something, like pH.
Oh, vial.
Not well, not vile, but file. P-H-I-A-L. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah. No joke, this entire time I thought it was F-I-L-E. I'm like, this is bizarre.
Well, yeah, the game is bizarre, but at least, well, really, file is also a very strange word. That
Yeah, definitely.
I can't remember the last time I've heard that word aside from Monster Hunter.
That's true, like World of Warcraft or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But well, that's interesting. It's cool. I mean, and you also, and on top of that, you have to pay attention to whether or not you need to temper your blade or whatever you do. What's it? Whetstone. Yeah, to sharpen it.
What kind of damage does your Gunlance do?
Gunlance, I forget because I haven't used it for a while, but Charge Blade.
So I imagine the blade does slashing damage, but then do you do a specific kind of damage on the other?
I think it's like half. It kind of feels like the kind of blunt and also like whatever the axe damage is. I forget what, if that's slashing or whatever.
Slashing or something,
But like the sword, like, you know, you might do three quick strikes and it's like, you know, 20 HP, 20 HP, 20. But then one huge hit with the axe is, you know, 60 or 80 or something. So yeah. If you can really wind up your combo and also discharge the energy while you're swinging with the axe, you just start really racking up the combos. And it's like, it's much easier to stun or chop off parts of a monster if you really connect with that, with the huge axe combo.
Yeah, I've been using the hammer, and there's a move called Big Bang Smash. And every time you do it, it goes Big Bang Smash 1, Big Bang Smash 2. And if you get up to, I think it's like 4 or 5, you do like Ultra Big Bang Smash, which, by the way, is fun to yell out like you're in an anime film, like Big Bang Smash. When you land that last hit, it does like 130 damage. It's insane.
Oh my god.
Yeah. But you have to land each of the smashes in order to get there. Like, you cannot do Big Bang Smash 2 unless you hit 1, and so on and so forth.
I mean, I am in a mindset for this game because of all of the Souls games we've played over the years.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because it is very much a, I mean, I will say, I won't defend it completely. Like, I do think this game is quite janky and not always in a good way.
Totally.
But when it is good, it's like, okay, this is basically like a less precise version of Dark Souls. And that is really fun when you're trying to figure out the best way to approach a monster.
100%. And I think it's telling that we've spent almost coming on 10 minutes just talking about weapons.
Yeah.
And only two of them.
Yes.
because they are that convoluted. But I think like Destiny or like Bloodborne or like any of the Souls games, there's a natural tendency to start speaking the lingo of Monster Hunter. Like, you start speaking in the same words that you hear or see in the game, and it becomes its own vocabulary in the way that an MMO would, really, which I think this similarly fits into. But yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the Bloodborne thing, because I think having that knowledge about, you know, animation and animation canceling on your weapons, the idea of even experimenting with the weapons, like Bloodborne doesn't really have all that many weapons in the game compared to something like Dark Souls, but every trick weapon really stands out as this like crazy unique thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the same mind frame that the weapons in Monster Hunter World create, because when I see someone doing crazy dual blade backflips, like super edgy, and I'm over here just like throwing this enormous hammer, it feels like we're playing essentially two different games. Like the style of play is different, the combos are different, where you're positioned in the against the body is different. Like, I really enjoy that as a hammer user, because I'm doing blunt damage and KO damage, I'm often at the head, whereas people are slashing at the tail. And that opens us up to different attacks even, right? Like, there are tail swipes that will hit you while you're trying to do your charge blade attacks. And then there are fire and head smashing attacks that will hit me, right? And like, the fact that our weapon changes where we're at in the battlefield, which changes what we're fighting up against, feels like it's a really, almost like a specialized world, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So just to finish up the weapon stuff for you, like you were doing hammer. Were you doing any other weapons?
So only the hammer and the hunting horn. Because I got it, there's such strong positive feedback from the hammer. And it reminds me a lot of the Kirk hammer, which was my first weapon in Bloodborne. And so I just naturally started using that. And then because I really enjoy playing as a support class, I switched to the Hunting Horn. Mm-hmm. And the Hunting Horn, like, it's similar to the Hammer in the sense that it's very, very slow. You often do really large sweeping attacks. It does do KO damage as well. Mm-hmm. But it is, like, vastly different. Like, in order... I don't know if you said you played around with the Hunting Horn a little bit, but...
Yeah.
If anyone who's listening doesn't know, like, the way that it works is essentially every single Hunting Horn has its own set of notes that you can play. And if you play the notes in a particular way, you can cue them up in order to trigger up to... I think it's up to three, maybe it's five songs.
It was something like three or so, I think.
And so once those songs are cued and you hit R2... you sort of kick the hammer and start doing the tune. And when you're singing, all you can do is move. You can dodge out of the way, but you'll cancel the song. Mm. And those songs will buff your party, heal them, whatever. But it'll
have you been just using that the horn in multiplayer context, or is it actually viable when you're by yourself?
I think it's viable by yourself as well. It's probably just not as good. I've mostly been using it in a cooperative format.
Yeah.
I have used it sometimes in single player when I feel like, oh, I'm probably going to fire an SOS flare in this mission, so I'll just bring the Hunting Horn and start it out, you know, and I'll get like 3/4 of the way before anybody joins me, and then it becomes a multiplayer experience. But, you know, even beforehand, it still does pretty good damage, and if you bump your attack, like, you know, the base attack, I think, is plus 10% damage. And if you after you play a song, you can do an encore and play the song again, and it doubles it up. It enhances it. So you can plus 20% attack to your entire party. Like, it's insanely strong if you can pull the song off and not die in the process.
Yeah. I mean, that to me, especially for what I imagine are the pretty difficult late game battles, you want someone just horning the whole time.
I mean, having that extra defense is huge. I mean, you know, there are songs that, you know, when I was fighting a Rathian with people, and the Rathian is this like huge flying monster. I mean, all the monsters are fucking huge, but the Rathian in particular is very large.
Yeah.
And it has a poison attack. And when you're poisoned, it does a good chunk of damage, like significantly more than, you know, something like Dark Souls.
Yeah.
And you want to clear it. But in order to clear it, you have to, you know, get your item over into the antidote slot or whatever. And then even the animation of drinking your antidote is very long. So what I'd often do is always have, there's a particular horn that has heal plus antidote. So as soon as I saw someone in my party was poisoned, I would just play my song and it would trigger that. And so we could have it queued up. And when you're thinking like that, like, okay, I'm going to be ready for this phase, or if this happens, I'll be ready, or, you know, if I want to refresh defense, like, you start staggering songs and thinking about it in that way, and it becomes really, really helpful in some of those harder battles.
I think that sequence that you just described is why people love Monster Hunter, because even though it is a one-to-one action game where you are directly interacting with control to make a sword swing on the screen, you're also thinking about what are the next three moves that I should be doing.
Interesting.
Because the monsters have very set attack types, you know, you can predict what they're gonna do, and it's about execution, and it's about, okay, well, if I get poisoned, then I know I have to take this sort of medicine, and it's going to take this long, which means I should do as much damage right now. Like, you really have to think about a few things in advance, because the animations and the monsters and even running to find the monsters take such a long time. You have to think about, what is my sequence of events, because I'm not just going to be able to instantly pivot. You know, I'll need to have my moves queued up in a way.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's interesting. I hadn't really thought about it almost like, not like a turn-based game, but you are sort of, you have to think about things more than just the action at hand.
Yeah.
Like, so for example, I was just playing Shadow of the Colossus, the classic remake. It's fantastic. I love it.
Never heard of it.
Never. it's natural to start comparing this and Monster Hunter, right? Where every time I fight a monster, it's like one really long boss battle. And that's what Shadow of the Colossus is, right? You're fighting 13 or so colossi throughout the entirety of the game, and every time you encounter one, it's its own discrete boss. And there are levels and phases in Shadow of the Colossus as much as there is in Monster Hunter, but Monster Hunter is significantly more complex to a point where you're not only thinking about statuses, you're thinking about where you're attacking the body. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you want a particular tusk, you may need to start trying to knock it off of that particular part of the body, right? So there's all of, you're adding in all of the elements of hunting specifically to hunt, right? To loot specific goods off of those monsters. But then you also have the different phases of the monsters that you're trying to think ahead for, right? You might think, oh, you know, this guy doesn't really start poisoning, you know, the Puku Puku doesn't really start to lay down the poison gas until phase two or phase three, so I don't have to be so much worried about my antidotes right now, but then in phase two I do, right?
Yeah.
Or you might even think of the landscape. Like, one of the things that I love about Monster Hunter World is how many environmental interactions there are.
Mm-hmm.
When you're fighting the Anjanath for the first time and it goes to its nest like opens up and it drops down a level below and then comes crawling back up, you know, through the vines.
I don't know if I did that, by the way. So when I was fighting the Anjanath, it went up to its nest and then I followed it up there and I was expecting something else to happen because it was really bouncy. Like,
yeah.
it seemed like this could fall at any time. Never did.
Interesting. Yeah, so it does bounce, so you can be fall down, but if someone like jumps off or I think he'll do it sometimes just naturally. He'll sort of burrow through that and go into the lower levels. And then come back up again and like try to eat you and stuff.
Huh. Yeah, I wonder what the deal was. Maybe there were,
I mean, I think a lot of times it's just where you fight it, you know, and whether or not you let it get back, and because sometimes you're fighting monsters in different areas, right? In the end game, when the monsters start to roam, like you'll find an Anjanath in a different location than you originally saw one.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
Every time they're using the environment in a different way. So I mean, again, in terms of complexity, you're thinking in all of these levels, and you're also thinking like, how can I use the environment around me? You know, can I open up one of the, there's like poison cup plants that you can trigger, or you can trigger a rock fall, or you can trigger some other sort of trap. Maybe it's even just where you are seeing the vigor wasps, which heal you as you're fighting, and sort of where you need to move around the battlefield in order to position yourself in a good way, or how you're going to climb up onto a little ledge, the tiniest ledge, in desperate hopes that you can do a jumping attack. That then leads into
rodeoing.
And all of those levels, I think, make every time that you refight these monsters still really exciting. You know, it doesn't feel like you're rinse wash repeating the same tactic. You have to adapt and think about where you're at in that particular phase of battle and perform accordingly.
I remember I accidentally kicked some sort of little bug that was on the ground and it paralyzed me.
Oh yeah, the toads, the paratoads.
I mean, it was a toad, yeah.
Those are great examples because they can really hide in the landscape and you could not see them. But if you see them and exploit them, you could kick it and just completely use a huge opening to damage the monster that you're fighting.
I was thinking about trying to learn, because what I haven't done yet is used... I haven't really gotten too proficient at traps or, you know, tinged meat or whatever. Have you been using those a lot?
Not the meats. The electric traps I have, because the electric traps can knock someone out for a decent chunk of time and really open up the ability to knock them down, especially if you've been fighting a monster multiple times and you generally know their pathing. As they're fleeing, you could sort of stun them briefly and then attack them, which is pretty nice. I've gotten better at using dung. Because sometimes monsters will meet each other and have, I think the game calls them turf wars.
Yeah.
And all of the animations of these turf wars are fucking stellar. Like, it's so cool. You'll be like fighting one monster and then a bigger monster shows up and just chows down on your guy. And I've been in battles where there's like three monsters all just going ham. And if you fire dung at them, just like humans, monsters don't like shit being thrown at them. they'll run away. Yeah. It's great.
I did have a couple, like, so far, especially in the expedition mode where more emergent stuff happens, I was just running around chasing what are those fucking goofy looking monsters that throw a rock at you? Kulu Yaku.
Yeah, Kulu Yakus.
And I was just fighting one of those things, because those things just piss me off. I just want to hunt them when I see them.
They're so cute though when they have their own egg and then they drop it and they're all upset. It's great.
That's right. One less Kuluyaku.
One less Kuluyaku.
But then all of a sudden I see some weird sparks coming from off the screen, and then behind me a bush basically catches on fire, and I swing the camera around and a fucking Rathian's descending from from the other side.
Yes.
I'm like, oh fuck, and I roll out of the way, and then it starts just fucking up that Kuluyaku.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Destroying it. And then after it kills it, it turns its eyes on me, and then I'm just running across the map away from this thing.
I mean, what's great is sometimes you'll get lucky and a monster that's too big for you to fight will still get pieces knocked off of it because it's fighting other things. And you're like, oh,
just scavenging.
Like, yeah. I mean, you could just sit and watch them duke it out. It's pretty entertaining. Is there a monster that has been your favorite thus far?
I think that Rathian was very cool just because it was completely unexpected, and also there were so many different things it could do, from the fire breathing to like when it jumped onto the ground and started using its tail and stuff. It was a cool thing.
Did you have the waterfall open up and then push him off of the cliff?
No, I fought him somewhere. It was more in like an open field area, so it wasn't near the waterfall.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, that's a good one.
I need to use more of the environmental stuff too. Like, I've done it a little bit, but I'm sure there's more that I could be doing.
Yeah. I do. I still really like the first battle, actually, against the Jagras. It's just a silly fight. Like, the way that it swallows a beast and then becomes, like, stronger. Yeah. And you could knock it out if you hit the stomach.
Those things are just funny because, I think this. Another reason why the game is cool is that it's. Obviously you're upgrading your weapons and armor, but you're also just getting smarter about what the monsters can do and how to approach them.
Yep.
And the first time when I was hunting the great Jagras, I was like, oh man, this is so crazy. And now it's basically just an annoyance to me.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you just go to town on it. When you are, I saw this actually, this is amazing a video online. There's a weapon that when fully charged just becomes straight up an automatic machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
And four players all have it, all ready and charged and active. And a monster, I think it's an Anjanath, but it might be a different monster, comes out of the woods, and they just open fire, and it just dies within like 15 seconds of just four like max high-level guys shooting machine guns. It's kind of sad.
I mean, I thought that Anjanath was cool too, because you do run away from it early in the game, and then later you have to go hunt it as kind of your final entry level test of, you know, having the world open up for you.
And it's one of the first times that you realize you can get fucking one shot in Monster Hunter. Yeah.
That was a fun battle actually, because there was just a lot of there was a lot of trying to sneak up on it, or, you know, jump off a ledge to get to it. Like, there was, I feel like that was one of the more dynamic battles that I've had.
Yeah. I mean, all of the landscapes, I think at first seem small and not that dynamic. And then after a while, they really start to expand. Like, there's some worlds later on.
It's because the game is just so busy.
It is very, yeah, that's true. But it's also, it's meandering and connected in ways that you might miss. Like, you know, even in the ancient forest, that first landscape you go to, there are times when I went back like 25 hours into the game and realized I could swim through a small water gap and just move around the landscape in a way that I didn't realize, right? Or that you can climb so high in the ancient forest and there's like whole other little regions up top there, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the game has what, 6 locations, including where you're fighting Zoramagdaros, but for the most part, all of them are way bigger than you first expect.
Yeah, they're dense. There's a lot of, there's multi-layers to them. I think I'm finally getting a handle on all of the variety of crafting. There's some fairly okay quality of life stuff. Like, I realized that I should really start messing more with the auto-crafting system to prevent, you know, spending hours and hours in the menus.
Wait, how do you autocraft something?
So you can, if you're going into the menu, you can go into the crafting menu, and then I think you press triangle to set something to autocraft. So like, basically, if you have enough like potions and honey, it will automatically turn it into a potion plus without you having to actually manually craft it.
I should do that.
Yeah. It's pretty It also just helps you keep your inventory cleared out, because yeah. I'm already running into the problem of my pouch is full.
Oh, dude, I've been selling things left and right. I'm a broke boy again. I'm just constantly out of money, exactly like Breath of the Wild.
Wait, out of money?
I'm constantly out of money. I mean,
What are you spending money on?
Crafting shit, like crafting weapons. I have like 7 hunting horns.
Okay, well, I guess that's... I mean, I feel like that's one of the things that I just haven't been spending money. Like, I probably have just tens of thousands of money. Or Zenny, that's what they are, because it's Zenny, Capcom. Yeah. Fucking Capcom. Zenny.
To be fair, though, you spend way faster in leader levels. Like, you know, upgrading a piece of armor can cost like 10,000 Zenny.
Oh, yeah. That'll do it then.
Yeah.
How about the armor? I feel like I realized that, like, the armor skills, like, I started basically specking towards what I find, you know, most crucial in a battle. So I bought some armor that lets you eat faster or drink faster.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I think it doesn't really matter until endgame for the most part, when you're like, you know, an enemy's fire attack is so devastating that you really need, I don't know, fire armor or whatever.
Yeah.
Because what I find is I've generally used the same armor until it's like, wow, I'm really getting hit like a truck here.
Mm-hmm.
And then upgrading. The one exception being I like to look fresh as hell. So I've spent... I mean, the armor in this game is absurd, because there's armor that looks awesome. Like the Paolumu. I don't know if you've fought this monster yet. It's like a big, puffy, furry thing. And it makes just these awesome, chic fur coats that are so fresh.
I was going to try to buy one of those for my Palico.
Right. They're really nice. But then, like, the Zora Magdar's armor could look really dumb. Like, there's some really dumb armor sets as well.
But you want to get those sweet buffs. I mean, you have to put up with Kmart brand of armor or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, those as well, right? Like, there is absolutely money sinks. You know, you could definitely say, I want a suit of armor for every occasion. Yeah. You know, weddings and funerals. And then just really deck yourself out.
Funerals of all the monsters that I'm slaying.
Exactly. I mean, when they run away all sad and like whimper back to their nest, and you just show up and murder them, it's pretty...
Thank you for leading me back to your den.
Yeah, exactly. I will kill your children now.
I think the kind of the cadence of the game is also interesting, in that when you are doing a quest of any sort of magnitude or note, it's not a game where you can play for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
I realized even getting into a quest where it's like, okay, I'm going to go into a quest. Well, first I better take a look at the botany tent or whatever. I've been growing stuff, and now I'm going to go forge some weapons, and then, better eat a meal. Got to eat a meal before I go out there. And then the quest itself is comprised a lot of, you know, running and chasing monsters. And I mean, there's a reason why it's like, okay, you have 50 minutes for this quest. Yeah. It's not a thing where you just pop in and do a thing. It's meant to be consumed in pretty sizable chunks.
Honestly, that's probably the biggest reason I haven't played in a week, is just, I haven't really found the time where it's like, you know, I need to commit an hour into this first time I play. I have to commit an hour, and I just can't always guarantee that I have that hour, you know?
Yeah,
because you're right. Like, you do have to. I mean, it's not only that. Like, there are, you know, there's the guy that comes into town like once a week later on. I don't know if you've unlocked him yet, but there's a guy that comes into town once a week to sell shit, and you got to go see him if he's in town, because he'll leave if you go do too many missions. There's cats that you unlock later on, or palicos that you can send on missions, in the very much like the Assassin's Creed 2 style, where they go and bring things back. Got to check on them. Got to check on your herbs. Got to sell any things. Shit, you're running out of Zenny. Time to, you know, like, sell all of the things you're using. Oh, you're running out of, like, certain types of potions. Now you need to go into your menu, craft them. Oh, you can't craft them because they're in your tent.
They're in my
menu.
Box,
exactly,
not in
your
pouch,
box.
Yeah.
You gotta go to, you know what I mean? And so there's all of those steps to just get ready. And then, like you said, the quest itself. And not only that, you know, it's a real possibility, especially if you bring in blueberries, where you're like 30 minutes into a match and you wipe 3 times, and that's it. Like, you just lost 30 minutes of your life. You maybe got 2 pieces of things that you broke off them, but at this point you're done. And you gotta reset.
Or the most enraging / disheartening
running out of
Anjanath
time.
Anjanath has left the area. I was like, God damn it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And there are times where like that's going to happen, especially for some of the fights later on when you are choosing to hunt multiple monsters in one session.
Yeah.
You know, because you could get one down, two down, but if you're trying to get that third down within the time limit, it could be really rough.
It's a unique... I could see why it could force people to bounce off of it, but it's a really unique rhythm of that game that you don't find in a lot of modern games anyway. I mean, there's just a lot of strange rough edges to the game that are kind of inherently part of it, but you don't really see a lot even in modern MMO style games.
Yeah. I think it's actually very similar to Shadow of the Colossus in that way. Because you do have to set some time aside. And to some extent, I think it's true of even Dark Souls and Bloodborne, right? Where you know, okay, I can hop in for like 20 minutes and just like farm souls or whatever. But, you know, if you're looking to actually make progress in those games, you have to set some time aside to learn and familiarize yourself with the map.
Yeah. You know? It's just inherently not stage-based. You know, these runs are an hour-long run. And, the prep of it. I mean, really, it does in a weird way. It complements the way that they've built that world, the way that the story even works for, you know, whatever story that they have, where there's this whole cast of people where, oh, we're the second fleet. We're the researchers and the smiths and stuff. You know, it's very, everyone has their discrete little jobs, and the world is actually very intricate and ornate in a funny way. And that's kind of how you have to play the game too. Yeah. You have to go through these little rituals to even
I'm your Palico get out to slave. The
hunt. Yeah.
Free me.
I'm Palico rights movement starts here.
Yeah. It's Meowster, please.
Yeah. There's just a lot of weird intricacies that you have to buy into, or else you will be driven crazy by the game.
Yeah, definitely. The one thing I will say that helps that a little bit is being able to join somebody else's game, because then if you lose, it's like, okay, well, you know, no sweat off my back.
And people could be doing quests that maybe, you know, you just did and you know how to do it, and it's easier to like run through it with multiple people and in a very like Dark Souls type of way.
Definitely.
I've enjoyed that quite a bit. Even though it is a little bit baffling to link up with people.
That's true. It could be way easier to link up with friends. Absolutely. I mean, even just the idea of like, can you tell me what a fucking guild card is, for crying out loud? I don't know,
but I need to look at them or else it doesn't go away on the screen.
Yeah. And there's also like trophies and stuff that you can unlock if you get a certain number of guild cards.
I don't even know how to make a guild. Do you have to go up to that very top part of the town?
No idea.
I guess?
I've never done it. I do have an awesomely fresh guild card, though, I can send you. It's like a business card with a picture of me and my Palico on it. It's great.
It's a hologram.
Yeah. You know, the one part of the game that I think really crawls to a halt are all of the Zora Magdaros missions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The scripted stuff is pretty... rough.
Yeah, real bad. Like, to the point where you're like, why am I spending 10 minutes reloading a fucking cannon? This is insane.
The first time I did that, I didn't... It's so bad at telling you what to do. I didn't even really know. I was like, man, all of these ballistas don't have ammo in them? Like, what kind of fucking mission is this?
who's running this military?
Yeah.
Idiots.
And then I realized, oh, okay, I get it. There's a bunch of ammo.
I thought behind. You but said like, you were prepared for Zora Magdaros.
Seriously. And you know, the monster is just inching its way closer and closer to the cliff that I'm on. I'm like, well, this isn't going well.
Yeah, that's a very good point. The other thing, too, is even when you jump on their back, there's not that same sense of scale or feedback that you would get from, like, Shadow of the Colossus. Like, it really doesn't feel like... you're on an enormous monster. It feels like
a stage.
Yeah, it feels like a stage. Yeah. I think they missed the ball a little bit there. But, you know, those are, what, three missions in the entire game?
Yeah, and it's definitely not the... it's not the focal point of the game, and you just kind of have to get through those in order to get to the next level. But, it really does function well as kind of a... don't pay attention to the story too much, but just pay attention to the overall... you know, set dressing and cool environment, and it becomes a MMO-like activity to do.
Oh, I have not been paying attention to the story at all. If I could skip cutscenes, I would.
I really do like the idea that it takes so long to get to the new world that they've just been sending people over the course of decades.
Well, I mean, is all of this stuff from old Monster Hunter games?
Like, I don't know if it's first, second, third wave.
I don't know.
But I mean, it is cool to be like, oh, the first fleet landed here and we had to turn the boat into our houses because that's all we had was the boat.
Yeah. And they were just desperately trying to like clear out Jogresses and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, the great Jogress War of 1066.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would be really cool actually to have more like crazy battles just outside the gates. Because there's that first mission where the cutscene shows like an Anjanath almost breaking in.
Yeah.
Like, that would be cool to really hit home, like, how precarious some of those settlements are.
I mean, that's, it's a good, we need a Monster Hunter World prequel where you're part of the first, you know, you're part of, you got to clear out all those fucking Jogresses.
I'm sure it probably already exists.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Sure. That's the season pass.
Yeah. So
Monster Hunter World Rising.
You are liking this game. I'm liking this game. Is this something that you see yourself continuing to play as the year goes on?
I mean, I want to. It is a long time commitment, and it's not something where you can just, oh, I'm going to pause this right now.
Definitely.
So I would like to.
It could be something that's like, you know, a monster, a few monsters a week kind of thing.
That's kind of how I've been handling it. I mean, like every once in a while I'll get an hour free and it's like, oh, I bet I can do the next mission in about this time. And it roughly breaks down to that. And, you know, over the course of the year, you know, all of the optional quests and stuff kind of keep you coming back. So I could see doing something like that.
I mean, there are still I'm 40 hours in and there's still so many monsters I have not yet fought.
Yeah. Looking at that roster that we were looking at, it's kind of scary where it's like, where are they hiding all that shit?
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Actually, now that I'm looking at the list, the one that stands out, the Toby Kadachi, the electric lizard, I really enjoy that fight. He's so fast.
Hmm. Cool, I don't think I got there yet, but I'm excited to play that.
Yeah. Man, look at all these monsters. Kill them all.
I need to hunt them all. I need to carve them up.
I mean, I got to look fresh, you know? The question is, like, which one has the coolest looking armor?
I am happy that I jumped onto this one because I feel like might not be able to dedicate the time to something that is any more aggressively complicated than this.
Yes, that's that's very true. Yeah, I'm glad that this game is as accessible as it is, though, because everyone that I've talked to that has experience playing past Monster Hunters have said that this is one of the easiest ones to get into, and I think it's really exciting for them, right? Like, if you're a hardcore Monster Hunter fan, and, you know, Monster Hunter is popular again, and it's playable on these, like, next-gen consoles in, like, beautiful, you know, 4K or whatever. Like, that's super cool. That's really exciting.
This Kuliyaku is in beautiful 4K.
I mean, I saw great videos of, like, those crazy dual-blade dancers doing super edgelord stuff, like, spinning over a Diablos. It's super rad. It looks so neat.
We're dancing with them. We're the monster dancers.
I mean, there are absolutely scenes, especially those turf wars, that lend themselves really well to, like, just game capture. Like, I saw a guy snipe a monster as it was, like, jumping out of the ground. It was so cool.
Finally, we've gotten the Pokemon Snap sequel we've been wanting.
I mean, yeah, if I could hunt Pokemon and skin them, if I could, like, wear a Pikachu carcass, I would gladly play that game.
Oh, man. Yeah, I will be interested. Maybe, you know, a while later, once we've both finished, maybe later in the year, we'll take another dip back in and see what's going on. I still need to do more of the multiplayer specific stuff, so yeah. I think that's probably my next try.
Yeah, and I'm definitely interested to see how they keep the game going, because there is a lot of content in the base game. I'm curious to know what the sort of DLC plan is. Like, do they release monster by monster stuff in the way that they sort of did live events for Horizon Zero Dawn? Is it like expansions? I don't know. I mean, it may even have changed in this Monster Hunter versus others, you know?
Yeah. Cool. Well, I guess we'll leave it there for now. We got plenty of, meticulously crafted meals to eat.
Exactly right.
experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our hideaway in the woods. We're spying on those. We're spying on those Palumos and those Pookie Pookies.
I just like to watch them sleep.
These names are great, by the way. Giratsdus. Dodogama. Pretty good.
Yeah. We want to hear all of your exploits. And also, if someone could explain to me exactly how the charge blade works. So I think I'm about 60% there.
Yeah.
Cool. Everyone, thank you for listening. Until next week, we'll be talking to you soon.
Rawr!